Hello and welcome to our Vital Health Community call for the month of November. It's the Vital Health Topic Call, and I'm super, super excited today to be here to talk about a topic that we don't talk about a lot, and I think it's a super important topic, and that is the topic of vision and your eye health. And I have a special guest here, and we're going to share the stage here today. I'm going to do the start and talk a lot about the nutrition and other biochemical type things that are related to eyes and vision health. And then Claudia is going to talk about natural ways with other lifestyle things and a very comprehensive and holistic approach to natural vision care. So I'm super excited to have Claudia with us. And I'm going to go ahead and get started, give people a chance to go. I'm going to have my slides going, and I'm going to share with you some things related to vision and nutrition. And then I'm going to introduce Claudia properly and give you a little background on her. And then she's going to talk to you about natural and holistic ways to preserve your vision and to not have to necessarily rely on glasses and contacts and, you know, surgeries and all that sort of stuff. So without further ado, let me go to my slides. You should see my first slide, and this is a short presentation, and I'm going to give most of the time to Claudia. So we have a problem in our society where there's an epidemic of insulin resistance, diabetes, and what I call pre-insulin resistance, which is people that are falling through the cracks. And actually, some of them are losing their vision before their doctors even associate that they have blood sugar imbalances, before their doctor actually gets the idea from the testing that they actually have a blood sugar problem. It can actually be damaging the vision. So a lot of what's happening with that is related to our junk food diet, right? The food pyramid. And this is kind of a funny exaggeration of the food pyramid. But for many people, this is what they eat, right? The base of their thing is the sweets, the cookies, the cakes, the donuts, et cetera. And they're not getting the fresh fruits and vegetables. I remember working with a client, a patient in my office years ago, and he said to me, I eat fruit every day. I eat these packages of Hostess cherry pies. That was his fruit and vegetable intake for the day. So we need to change this. And I know a lot of you, you know, you've already heard a lot of the talks I've done in the Vital community. Many of you have been here for a long time. Many of you have been into health for a long time. But most people don't realize how the impact of this food that we're eating on a regular basis is affecting our vision as well as our overall health. And things have to change, right? On average, people in the U.S. alone are eating about 150 pounds of sugar a year. Whoops. About 150 pounds of sugar a year, enough to fill an industrial-sized dumpster. And many of us on this call don't eat much or any. I don't eat any. My kids never ate any. Claudia, I know, doesn't eat any anymore, and Angelica doesn't. And, you know, so some of my team members that are on this call and the participants, and many of you don't eat sugar, at least in its form, its processed form. But there's a lot of other sugar besides just sugar. Like, I don't have a bowl of sugar on my counter like my mother did. We have the sugar bowl. And, you know, if somebody comes over and they want a cup of tea and they say, can I have sugar to put in my tea? I'm like, I don't have sugar. I'm sorry. I don't even have any of the other powdered stuff. You want stevia? You want erythritol? You want monk fruit? I have all of that, but I don't have any forms of sugar in my house. So even things like honey, even things like pasta and bread, they're converting to sugar in the body and they're affecting your vision. So it's super important that we get a handle on this and that we preserve our vision, because when you lose your vision, you lose a lot of the pleasure in life. You lose a lot of things, and it's painful, some of the eye diseases that happen as a result of this problem. So we talk about retinopathies, and I want to tell you a little bit about retinopathies and what can cause them. Then I'm going to turn it over to Claudia, and then I'll come back on and we can kind of talk about what to do, and then we'll be open for questions. So, you know, sugar, we know, is that if you're in this community and you've been here for a while, you know, we talk about like white table sugar. Most of you probably don't use, but you don't realize that the agave, the honey, went to a raw foods restaurant yesterday and got this amazing pizza. But it turns out, like last time I was there, they had this quote unquote pepperoni on top that was made from coconut. It was made from fresh coconut that had been dehydrated, and they put like, I don't know if it was beet or some other kind of coloring to make it look pink. And it was delicious. And I asked about it, but I was asking about some other things on the menu. And I said, you know, what about, do you use agave in this or that or the other thing? And they said, oh yeah, we use it in that. And then I ordered the pizza and he says, well, we use agave in that pepperoni. I'm like, what? Like, why do you need something sweet with coconut? Let me ask you that. It's pretty darn sweet to begin with. Why are even health food restaurants, a raw food plant-based restaurant, is including sweet in their savory food? So there's a lot of education that still needs to happen about the dangers of living this way. So I said no on the pepperoni topping. I did get, you know, the pizza crust and the cashew cheese and all the veggies on top and the kale, which was really good. But there's an education process that needs to happen here. And it's not just about our overall health. It's not just about cardiovascular, but it's also about vision, which is what we're here to talk about today. So I put together this slide, and it's based on some studies. I think the study is not on there. I took it off for the lay people, but I have this slide in a presentation for medical practitioners, which I gave just the other day, and people were really surprised at some of the statistics. So retinopathy, what is that? Pathy means pathological, so there's something bad happening. And retina is the part of the eye, and Claudia will talk a little bit more about the different parts of the eyes when she does her presentation. But these retinopathies, this damage, so if you look at the side on the left, there's some vessels, and if you look at the one on the right, there's these clumpy, it almost looks bruised, it looks like clumps of blood. That's retinopathy. It's damage to the retina, which affects the sight. And what they're finding is it develops at pre-diabetic blood sugar levels. So 60% of the people who had retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy, had fasting blood sugar below the medical range for diagnosis. It was below 7 on the international scale and below 126. 60% had developed this problem before the doctor diagnosed them. But here's the really shocking part. Between 7 and 13% had glucose below 100, 5.6. Glucose below 100. And doctors are telling people you're fine as long as your glucose doesn't go above 100. They won't diagnose insulin resistance until the fasting glucose goes above 100. Yet we're seeing a huge percentage of the people with this diabetic retinopathy, this damage to the eye, to the retina of the eye, when their sugars are in the quote-unquote normal range. And only 1 in 10 had abnormal post-meal blood glucose sugars, or blood sugars, by medical standards, probably many, even less, had it by our standards. But 1 in 10 had abnormal blood post-meal blood sugars. So whatever they're doing, whatever they're teaching, is not helping people to prevent these complications. And we're not here to talk about other complications of diabetes, but I'm just going to mention them real quick. The retinopathies usually develop later in the game, later in the damage game, than the neuropathies, but not always. Neuropathies means damage to the peripheral nerve. So numbness and tingling in the hands, not really feeling the hands or feet and not knowing that they're getting damaged. So this is critical. So if you want to get your, preserve your vision for life, and still be seeing well, I'm looking out the window right now, I'm looking at it, the grass, I'm looking at cars going by, so that's not so beautiful, but there's trees, there's the ocean is like, you know, a few miles down. I can see this stuff. I want to preserve that forever, and I bet you do too, right? We don't need to develop these. It's not diseases of aging. It's diseases of causing aging to the tissues in the body by not taking care of it. So those of you who are, you know, you're in the Vital community on the premium level where you have access to all the archives, go back and watch a lot of different things we've talked about with the blood sugar, and also consider joining our Sweet Spot Solution Program, which we're going to be launching again in the beginning part of 2020. So this is super important, and I just have two more things I want to say before I introduce Claudia, because she's going to talk about the other things that affect your eyes, the stress, the movement, the tension in the muscles, and so many other things that I can't begin to tell you because that's not my area of expertise, but it is hers. So this is an important slide for me, an important visual. We kind of know, most of us know, when we look at the stuff on the left, right, that stuff's bad for us. That stuff probably will cause our eyes to go bad, our blood vessels to go bad, our kidneys to go bad, and cause us to get diabetes or come close to it with insulin resistance. The stuff in the middle is kind of that gray area where a lot of folks are thinking, well, I'm eating whole grain bread. You know, it's whole grain. But in reality, the sugars, the flours are all the same in the body. When you eat flour, when you eat pasta or bread, it gets converted to sugar rather quickly and affects the body in the same way and affects your vision in the same way. And the last one, and this is what I'm going to get flack about, is that in some folks with sensitivity, and Claudia and I can speak to that because we both have had this problem, some of those sweet fruits are also causing raises in the blood sugar into those danger zones where the researchers found that retinopathies were developing. It doesn't mean these foods are bad. They are loaded with antioxidants and vitamins and minerals, unlike the other two groups. But there are stages where you may have been eating the stuff on the left. I know I grew up on that, and I ate that stuff for the first 20 years of my life. And I ate very little fruits and vegetables for the first 20 years of my life. I ate tons of bread, even into my 20s when I started to be a little bit more conscious, until I learned that that stuff was causing a problem. But then when I started testing my glucose, I realized that some of the really cool stuff like pineapple and papaya and mango were raising my blood sugar into dangerous zones. So I took myself through, as part of the Sweet Spot, those of you who have been in it, you know what we go through, is a metabolic reset where we get rid of all the stuff that raises the sugar into those dangerous areas for 30 days and then do nutrients and exercises and other things to balance it, to bring you back into a place where you can get your blood sugar under control and preserve your vision, preserve your nerves, preserve your extremities, preserve your kidneys, preserve your heart, your brain. All these things are associated with problems with sugar. It's not just about vision, but today we're here to talk about vision. So I'm a proponent of a new pyramid. Hydration is super important, and I think Claudia will touch on that, how important that is for the eyes, how important it is for the viscous material in the eyes. And so many people are dehydrated because they think that drinking coffee or tea or soft drinks provides them with the water they need, and actually those are dehydrating. Tons and tons of fresh fruits and vegetables, mainly the vegetables, that's the main one. The fruits, whatever you tolerate, with the other things up at the top, right? And this is a pyramid that I think will be, you know, adopted in the future, but we are the practitioners of the future. We are the consumers, clients, patients of the future. And if you're like me, you're saying enough's enough, we need to take charge of this. So getting a blood glucose meter is an awesome thing. Go back through your archives and learn more about blood sugar. Come to the next Healing Kitchen, which is going to be about keeping the sugar load and the carb load in a healthy range as we go through the holidays, where a lot of temptations abound. So all of this stuff is important for you to preserve your vision. And what I want to do is turn over the stage right now, the virtual stage, to Claudia. And I want to tell you a little bit about Claudia, and I'm going to bring her stuff up while we do that. So Claudia is a natural vision expert. She has been trained, and she was actually trained by one of the best in the industry, and she went over to Holland, and she worked overseas. She's from Germany, but she has been doing this for many years and helping people to restore their vision, and she can tell you her own story about how she preserved her own vision and got rid of her glasses, and she is dedicated to helping other people to do the same. So I'm super, super excited to welcome Claudia, And she's also one of our practitioners in our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training. And she is incorporating a lot of the food and lifestyle things that she learns there into her practice with people to even accelerate further the preservation and the improvement of the vision. So without further ado, Claudia, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rina Marie. And I really want to say to all the listeners that you really changed my life. I've already been really healthy. Like, I meet former coworkers and they're like, you are such a health nut. And I'm thinking, oh, you have no idea. So yeah, I had no idea about the blood sugar until about a year and a half ago when I met you. And I did take the Sweet Spot Solution program, which is an awesome program for anybody that's considering it. So, but yeah, let's get started. So my presentation, I will give you lots and lots of good tips and information. But I also want to have you learn about the most three common myths that keep you chained to glasses and contacts and worried about your declining vision. So there is a lot of wrong information out there about eyesight. Same with, you know, the food. It's kind of the same, very similar problem that we have. So let me start with a quote by Jacob Lieberman. So he is a former optometrist, PhD. And he said over half the people in the United States wear corrective lenses, and almost all of them are capable of seeing much more clearly if they would only experiment with changing their ideas about vision. And I'm hoping that you will change your ideas. My right eye turned in and I was extremely farsighted. And while the glasses helped me to see better, they really caused a lot of pain for me. I was teased in school back when I was, when I grew up in the 60s, I was the only kid with glasses except for one really smart kid in class. And I really felt like an outsider and I didn't like myself with the glasses. And as I got older, even when I had kids, when I had kids of my own, I still hated the glasses. And after a very difficult divorce, I found myself as a single mom of my two daughters that you see here, Lara and Zoe. I was sleep deprived. I was stressed out. I was lonely. And my vision got a lot worse, which I just, you know, thought it's, oh, I'm getting older. It's just normal that the vision gets worse. And I remember a particular experience. I went to a party, newly single, and I really didn't meet anybody. I tried so hard to have fun and I just felt old. I had just turned 40, felt unattractive and really disconnected. And when I got home and I got lost on my way home, I realized when I took my glasses off in my driveway that my vision was blurrier than ever. It was really so bad I couldn't see anything. And that really scared me. And at that point, I had a big realization that my vision wasn't just getting worse because I was getting older. But then when I noticed when I was stressed out, when I was tired, you know, when I didn't eat good, when I drank alcohol, like all these factors, and also my mental state when I felt lonely and confused and insecure, affected my vision, and my vision was worse. And when I was relaxed and happy and I felt supported and loved and, you know, did the ate good foods, my vision was a lot better. And no eye doctor had ever told me that my eyesight is variable and that it can be better or worse. I had never heard this before. So I started researching and I discovered natural vision improvement. By then, you know, we had the internet by that time. And I read everything I could about it. I attended workshops, I took private lessons, and over time my vision got better and better until I was eventually able to ditch those crutches for good. And I felt joy again, my kids felt happier, I just, like, my whole life changed. But I didn't want to stop there because I actually also didn't like my former career anymore. I worked in advertising as a graphic designer. I really felt like this was my mission to help others do the same. So I quit that job. I went to London, actually, Dr. Rina, I went to London to study natural vision improvement and I got my teacher certification. And I continued to study and got certified in other vision supporting modalities such as breath work, yoga, myofascial release, which is, you know, tension release. And now with your work, with your help, I'm also, you know, learning about nutrition and incorporating that into my practice. And a decade ago, so I've been teaching this for 10 years, and I've been teaching audiences all over the world. I just got back from Frankfurt, where I taught at the International Holistic Vision Conference. And I'm working with clients privately. And since a year and a half ago, I also do online courses. And it's really become my life's mission to bring this knowledge into the whole world so that everyone out there has a chance to see clearly without glasses. So let's talk. That's enough about me. Let's get back to you, and especially how you can improve your eyesight just like I did. And if you're in your 50s, 60s, or 70s or older and have an eye disease, it's never too late to reverse the decline. And like Dr. Rita Marie already mentioned, I cannot stand when doctors say it's age-related, because most of the time it's not age-related, but it's purely lifestyle-related. So we start with myth number three. So myth number three is that eye doctors know best, right? What do we do when we have when we have vision problems, or the vision gets blurry, you know, you're in your mid-40s, you know, we usually ask our friends for a recommendation for an eye doctor. So that's what we all do. So we go to the eye doctor, and what usually happens, and I'm sure you had a very similar experience, I did, usually you leave with a new prescription. And it might not be that different, but maybe a quarter after here, more in the astigmatism or in the sphere, or something changed. So are ophthalmologists and optometrists bad people because they give you glasses? No. Ophthalmologists are often the only resource to treat a progressive eye disease. I've met many people over the years who had successful cataract surgery at a point where there was no other option. And optometrists help millions of people who otherwise wouldn't know how to see clearly. So, but what happens when you go, when you get an eye exam, right? You leave there with new glasses. They often feel too strong. And the problem is with ophthalmologists and eye doctors, they don't really ask you any other questions. You go in, usually you don't have much time. It's a dark room, and you're probably not the most relaxed. You're kind of stressed out. So they look at you, they check your vision, and then they give you a new prescription. And they have a kind of myopic approach. So that's the thing. They don't really look. They don't ask you how you sleep, how your diet is, what's going on in your life. Are you happy? No eye doctor ever asked me that. And I'm sure most of you and my clients also tell me that eye doctors don't ask them that. So they're trained to look at your eyeball with the anatomical precision through very expensive machines, but they lack the far and the peripheral vision to look beyond the eyeball at the whole person sitting in front of them. So they don't ask you these things. They don't ask you about your life, what else you do, what you use your eyes. Do you work on the computer all day? What do you do with your eyes all day? So why do we make this annual eye exam, right? We get the postcard and nowadays an email from the doctor. So why do we go to the eye doctor even though the vision hasn't changed? Because we also don't question that eye doctors run a business, and I'm talking about optometrists specifically. They run a business selling glasses and contacts. So, you know, it's in their best interest that you go home with new glasses, especially fancy ones, progressives with astigmatism correction and special coating. And, you know, you, before you know it, you spend thousands of dollars on a new pair of glasses and contacts. But most of them, again, they just believe they help you doing this. They're not evil people. So I don't want you to think that I feel optometrists are bad people. So Americans spend about $30 billion annually in vision care products. And frames and glasses or lenses make up the largest portion, about $16 billion. So that's a huge industry. And so that means per person, depending on, again, what kind of glasses you get, it's about $200 to $1,000 per visit or per set of glasses. Again, especially if you have any more complicated vision problems, astigmatism, you wear bifocals or progressives, those get really expensive. And LASIK, so the other option, obviously, is LASIK surgery. So LASIK surgery costs an average of $5,000, and something called refractive lens exchange surgery, which is basically where they replace your lens with the artificial one. That's what's done in cataracts. But now people are getting those surgeries too, even if they don't have cataracts. So they're kind of implanting a lens, could even be a progressive lens, into your eye. Those cost about $12,000 at least, and no insurance covers the cost of that. So, and the crazy thing, what most doctors don't tell you, if you get LASIK, you're back in glasses within a decade or less, depending on when you do it. The longest I've ever heard anybody last was about 12 years. That's the longest I've ever heard. And a lot of people are in glasses way sooner than that. So, let's see. So I want you to, so my very first tip for you is notice that your vision varies, and it does for everybody. And if you haven't noticed that, then you probably just haven't paid attention, or maybe you have your glasses or contacts in all day and you're just not aware. But vision changes for everybody. So if you're stressed, if you're worried, if you didn't sleep much, or anything else is going, maybe you're sick, you have a cold, any of those factors will affect your vision. And sometimes for some people, it's the day after being on the computer, or depending on what you do all day. So your vision could be best in the morning and worse in the evening, maybe the other way around. So just check in and notice when it's best before you put your glasses on, so that you get a sense of when is my vision the best, when is it worse. And another key strategy is, so now that you know that, let's say your vision is always worse in the afternoon after you've half a day is over or the evening, then you don't go for an eye exam when your vision is best. Because I'm sure many of you have this experience. You get your new glasses and it's kind of like, they hurt my eyes and they give me headaches. And the doctors always say, you get used to that, don't worry. But basically your glasses are too strong because you were probably not relaxed. Maybe you were tired. Maybe you felt rushed by the eye doctor. So, and then they ask you, this or this, this one or that one. And after a while, you don't know anymore. And so you get a strong prescription. So go when your vision is best, when you know that your vision is best. And also say no to stronger glasses. So what I mean with that is, if you have enough clarity with your current glasses, enough clarity means that you have no more than 20/20 vision on the test chart. And I see many people that are overcorrected, so it's 2015 or 2010. And in most states in the United States, and same in Europe, you don't need more than 20/40 vision to legally drive without glasses. So I'm not saying that you should drive when your vision isn't good, but also you don't need, like, visual acuity, which is what they do with the eye chart, right? You sit, you're static, the eye chart is static. But now think about driving. You're moving, everybody else is moving, your peripheral vision is important, your depth perception, your night vision. Visual acuity on a static object is like maybe one of the least important factors, And now with Google Maps, we don't even need to read that street sign, two blocks over or three blocks over, because Google tells us turn left, turn right. So it's really important that you don't wear more strength than you need. If you do, then that will make your vision worse. So check in and don't use more strength than you need for whatever task you're doing. So next up is myth number 2, eyesight declines, right? We've all heard that. This is basically what everybody tells us. You get older, there's nothing you can do. So we totally believe that. I believe that. That's why I thought my vision was getting worse. So let's look at some statistics. I don't want to go in a lot into this, but basically what they found in some studies is that about 80% people of 45 or older have, in developed countries and in third world town, in the towns in the third world, have what's called presbyopia. I get that. It's that old age side, you need reading glasses, the near point gets blurry, and there's no difference in the gender. Like, women and men are basically having the same amount. But in the third world villages, in the little rural areas, there's a 50% higher rate of presbyopia in women than in men. So now, why is that? Because women do all the near work there. So the men go out and hunt and do their business, and the women sit at home and they weave, they mend, they tend to the children, they do all that work. And this is a good, really important indication that what you do with your eyes has an impact on what your vision, how your vision changes. And if we look at nearsightedness, so nearsightedness, here's some really, really scary statistics. In the 1970s, we had a rate of about 25% of nearsightedness, or technically called myopia. And in Asia, and some countries in Asia, in Singapore, for instance, it's now in the youth and children, 95% of children there are nearsighted. And in the United States and Europe, the rate is about 45% of not just children, but overall. So huge increase in the last, 30, 40 years, huge increase. And when they looked at interesting other studies, so they looked at Chinese living in Southeast Asia. They have that really high rate of up to 80, 90% of nearsightedness, depending on where they live. But Chinese living in Australia had only up to like highest level was 20%. And same with Chinese living in China that live in little villages, very low rate of nearsightedness, but very high in the cities. So why is that? Why do we have that high rate? Because it's environmental factors and lifestyle factors, not genetics. Genetics, a lot of times I hear people say, yeah, it's genetic, my parents had that. Genetics don't work that fast. They don't work within 30, 40 years, it suddenly we go from 25% to 90% in Asia. That's not genetics. So here's another really important tip, and that's also based on studies. So they noticed that children that play two or more hours outside have a low rate of nearsightedness compared to children who don't. And you know, in Asia, and that's not just a cliche, but in Asia, there's a huge focus on studying and learning. More and more children are just indoors, they're inside, they're in school. They don't really play because there's also no green spaces to play in the big cities, right? It's all concrete. You know, when I was little, like we would play, my mom would send us outside and it was like, come home when the streetlights come on, right? We would go into the forest. We would have crazy adventures, which we didn't tell our parents. But yeah, we spent like, 6 hours outside every day. So that was an interesting observation. So now know that the sun, and I know Dr. Rita Marie, you're really an advocate for that too. Sunlight is actually important for good vision. Our cone cells need sunlight. Those are the cells that give you clarity and color vision. They only work in the day. That's why at night everything is black and white and you don't see very clearly at night. So that's why, I recommend not wearing sunglasses. Again, there's exceptions, certain eye diseases. If you take certain drugs that impair your pupil reaction, you do want to wear sunglasses. Or if you're skiing, you're on a glacier, it's all white snow and bright sunlight. But in normal conditions, you don't need sunglasses. In fact, it's actually better not to wear them and wear a hat instead. So that's like another little tip. So now you're probably wondering, why do I call it a myth that, eyesight can only get worse as you age? Because the statistics are pretty scary with 80% of people getting that old age sight. So here's three different people. And the gentleman on the right, he's a friend of my, one of my best friend's dad. So he just turned 100 years old, Salma Ras. He has never worn glasses. I've seen his vision. He can read. He has 20/20 vision far, and he is also, he reads the restaurant menu. He doesn't bring out his flashlight. The type on his iPhone is not enlarged. And then Tara Portman Lynch, you might have heard of her, the world's oldest yoga teacher. She just turned 101 this year and also still teaches yoga. And then Agnes Kasparkova is a woman in a small town in the Czech Republic. She paints every summer. She paints these beautiful, intricate designs on the houses in her village and also no glasses. So what's their secret, right? So do they drink carrot juice all day or like what do they do? So it's really mindset. They don't buy into aging. They find joy in everything. And they love life no matter what. So many old people, like my mom is an example. It's like, my mom is actually pretty good, but she's still like, I'm 80, this is like normal, So she kind of expects the worst. And so a lot of people have that belief that it's just downhill from here, right? They have a very active social life. And, I don't have time to go into too much of that, but the vagus nerve, the nerve of the parasympathetic nervous system, the relaxation response, the newer part of the vagus nerve actually, we actually found out that actual social life, like connection with other humans, friendly humans, of course, is actually really important for our well-being and our health. And relaxation is the foundation of good vision, like in everything in life, being relaxed because it's stressed out. They do eat a healthy diet, all three of them, of course, and they do get plenty of movement. Sal has a little mini gym in his house. So he exercises every day. So yes, they do. I mean, of course, you know, those are given. So another thing, a good tip is give yourself some positive affirmations. So instead of saying, I'm blind without my glasses, or I'm blind as a bat, or I hear all kinds of things. Sometimes people say, I'm blind without my glasses, and then look at their glasses and it's like a -1 or some really minor prescription. So change this mindset around. My eyes are joy receivers. I have beautiful, and then your color eyes. I love my sparkly eyes. Thank you, eyes, for letting me see beauty. So turn that mind, that little chatter in your mind around to noticing what you do see versus what you don't see. So we have, that is a human tendency in all aspects of life, right? We focus on the bad stuff, not the good stuff. So now let's get to myth number 1. So this is really the most important myth. And this is the belief that the only option out there to improve your imperfect eyesight are glasses, contacts, or surgery, such as LASIK. That's what you hear from everyone, your family, your eye care professionals, your coworkers, the media. If you want to see better, go get glasses, contacts, or surgery. So why is it so important to bust this myth? Why is it so important that that's the only option for clear vision? Because, and maybe some of you have noticed that already, eyesight has never improved from glasses or contacts. In fact, most people report a decline in their eyesight after starting to wear glasses, because glasses are a band-aid. They address the symptom, not the root cause. It's the same with, you know, metformin for diabetes, right? It's a crutch. It's a way to treat the symptom, but not actually address the real problem. So now I want you to write this down. 90% of my eyesight has nothing to do with the anatomy of the eyeball. I know. Call me crazy, but I will explain this to you. So I'm not just making this up. And I don't want to talk a lot about the anatomy, just a little bit, so you understand some basics about the anatomy. So, you know, we have this round eyeball, then we have the lens, and the front is the cornea, the dome-shaped cornea. And when we look at something in the distance, the lens is flat, pretty flat. When we look at something at the near point, the lens has to bulge or thicken to produce clarity at the near point. So that's one aspect. And then the second one is the length of the eyeball. So on the top, you see ametropia is the technical word or professional word for normal sight. The focus falls right, see that little where the light rays bundle, right into that fovea in your retina. That's, by the way, the only area in your retina where you have perfect clarity. It's a very tiny, tiny spot, about the size of a pinhead. But when you have myopia or nearsightedness, your eyeball is a little bit too long, so the light rays fall in front of the eyeball. And when you are farsighted or presbyopic, the eyeball is a little bit too short, and the light rays fall behind it. So those are two factors, the length of the eyeball and the lens, and also the curvature of the cornea that affect how you produce clarity. So, but that's really all that's understood about the focusing process at this point. Even though we have hundreds of years of scientific research, and yet optometrists keep telling their 40-plus-year-old patients that a hardening of the lens is responsible for their declining near vision, which has never been proven. So, and the other thing, I was always wondering, and maybe you wonder too, if the shape of the eyeball or the cornea, you know, those faulty proportions, shouldn't your prescription be constant once you're done growing? They always say your eyeball is too long, you know, that's genetic. But once you're done growing, why is your prescription changing? Like, this makes no sense. Why is it not staying the same if it's based on those faulty shapes or too long or too short of an eyeball? And another factor are the muscles around the eyeball. So we have 6 very strong eye muscles. We have 4 so-called recti, and they one is on top and then on each side and the bottom. And then we have 2 oblique muscles. One on the top, that, you know, that one that looks like a little hook that goes over the eyeball, that's the superior, the top one. And then there's the same kind at the bottom. And now, do these 6 strong muscles maybe have something to do with the shape of your eyeball? considering the eyeball is a very soft, squishy structure and the muscles are very strong. Some scientists believe that too, but the mainstream vision care has completely ignored eye muscles. They don't even pay any attention to your eye muscles. So I want to, really quick story. I recently met a musician. I was checking in at LAX airport and we were still in line to get into the plane. And so this gentleman was in his early 60s. His name is Dan. And he told me, he's a musician, and he told me that he got his first readers at age 45. And by now he wears very, very strong progressive lenses. And even he's told me the funny thing is, or what he noticed, even when he has those strong glasses on, his vision gets blurry after reading sheet music for a little bit over an hour. So now the cause of that blur may be due to the muscle and mental strain and fatigue, and maybe he's making too much of an effort to see despite the magnifying glasses, right? Why would it otherwise get blurry? He has his full prescription on. And here's another interesting story. So this is a woman I met recently. Her name is Jasmine. She's in her mid-30s, and she had an interesting experience. She had to switch eye doctors due to a change in her insurance. Of course, the new insurance said, you have to do an eye exam, even though her vision hadn't changed. And the new prescription that she got from this new eye doctor shows over one diopter more nearsightedness, but her astigmatism is suddenly gone. And how can that be, right? I mean, her vision hadn't changed. She used her old glasses and they were totally fine. So that makes no sense. And I touched on this a little bit earlier because optometry is really less scientific than it looks. So why would the doctor ask this one or this one, that one or this one? If it's so easy to measure and so fixed, you know, like as if he's asking you what you want for your, what dressing you want for your salad, right? I remember sitting in that exam room, and after the second lens, I didn't know anymore. I'm like, okay, I don't remember. It's really confusing. And remember, the eyeball is a soft, squishy structure with muscles. It's not an eyeball made of steel. So of course, it changes with our tension, like the muscle tension. You know, you probably might have had a tight quad or a tight hamstring or some other tight muscle, and right, did it affect your range of motion, right? So the eye muscles are no different. Of course they affect your eyeball and your range of motion and what you can do with your eyes. And one little thing, and I know, again, I don't want to go into too much, but diopters can only correct you for one single distance. So it's the formula, it's measured with meters, but basically if you are nearsighted, your glasses correct you for a far distance, and that's measured at 20 feet or 6 meters. If you are farsighted, or presbyopic, your glasses are reading glasses. They are measured for the near distance at 16 inches or 40 centimeters. That's all diopters can do. But now, what the lens industry try to do now, because when you get older, you start with readers, and then your vision declines, and then your distance vision that was always great also goes downhill, and then you end up in what used to be bifocals. Nowadays, it's usually those progressives. They don't have those hard lines anymore that give you different diopters in different parts of your lens. So top part is for the distance, bottom part for the near, and then the middle part is for the middle distance. But now what happens, those glasses make a really dangerous assumption. They make the assumption that when you look down, that you're reading. But what the real life, you know, you're walking down a flight of stairs, or maybe you're hiking and you're going downhill on a really steep trail. And that's why countless falls often happen when people first get progressive lenses, because the strength is, and the bottom part of the lens is way too strong for like the distance of your, considering your height, when you look down to the floor, because they think you're reading, and your brain will struggle, right? Eventually the brain will adjust, because the brain is a miraculous organ, but it will struggle. And the other thing, now they assume you look straight ahead, that you look at the distance. But what happens when you sit at the computer? You look straight ahead. And what I see in offices all the time, so people that sit with like chin up posture, kind of craning the chin up a little bit, that's because you want to look through the middle part or the lower part of your lenses when you look at the computer. And that posture creates tension in the neck and the shoulders, which tension in the neck and shoulders contributes to vision problems. And this goes beyond the scope of this presentation. Posture creates astigmatism. So if you have your head tilted up the whole time, but you look down, you will get an astigmatism in a 145-35 degree angle. So there is a relationship that was discovered by an optometrist about head posture, eye movements, and astigmatism, and that's almost always the cause of astigmatism. So you get the progressives, you never had astigmatism, and before you know it, you also have astigmatism correction in your glasses. So the truth is glasses, contacts, and surgery don't improve your eyesight. They actually make it worse in the long term. And a quick example, because you might not believe me, so they did animal experiments with chickens, little chickens, with monkeys and some frogs. And what they did, so these scientists some chicks got a patch on one eye, like a little contact lens, like a blackening out that eye, that eye didn't get any light. And guess what happened to that eye? The eyeball grew too long. And that's why they also, confirming that research with the sunlight, if the eye doesn't get light, the eyeball grows too long and you get nearsighted. So they believe that it's the sunlight stimulates dopamine receptors in the retina that make sure that the eyeball grows to the correct size. But they also did another thing. They put contact lenses on these animals. Some got up to minus 10, minus is always for nearsightedness, and some animals got lenses plus 15, really strong for farsightedness. And guess what happened? The ones that got the minus lenses, the eyeballs grew too long, and the ones that got the plus lenses, their eyeballs grew short, so that they can see clearly despite those contact lenses on. And when they took their lenses off, the eyeball grew back to its original healthy round shape. Now, we haven't done experiments like that with humans for logical reasons, but they're all mammals, not the chicks, but the monkeys. And so many scientists believe that the human eye reacts the same way. Again, this hasn't been studied with humans, but it makes total sense. So glasses that are too strong actually make your vision worse. That's why you want to make sure you don't get glasses that are too strong. And I mentioned this earlier, once you get reading glasses, a few years later, your far vision will be bad too. You will have no more clarity, neither far nor near, even though you always had great distance vision. So another tip, if you want readers or you struggle with reading, I don't recommend them, but there's no need to spend a lot of money for readers at the eye doctor. You can, the drugstore glasses are just as fine. So, you know, you might have heard that those cheap readers destroy your vision. They destroy your vision exactly the same way like the expensive ones do, but I'm not saying they're not worse. The drugstore readers are not worse than the one that you get from your eye doctor. And another really important tip, that you don't wear progressive lenses anymore because they cause all these postural problems that lead to astigmatism. So you definitely want two pairs of glasses instead of progressive lenses. And I know they're convenient, but they really create a lot of damage. And, excuse me, they're really expensive. You might have noticed that if you wear them. So the key takeaway I want you to get, too, is that the environment and lifestyle have a far bigger impact than genetics on your eyesight. Genetics do play a role, especially with certain eye diseases that you might have gotten from birth. So what is the root cause? And this is really the key part, right? What is the root cause of vision problems? That's what we want to look at now. So 90% of your eyesight is determined by factors other than your eyeball anatomy, 90%. And these are aspects optometrists and eye doctors don't consider because they were never trained to do so. So what is that 90%? 90% of our vision happens in the brain, and that's that area here in the back of the brain, the visual cortex that's firing up. So basically, the retina is connected to the optic nerve, and I always think it looks like a thumb, the eyeball and that little tail, but it's the optic nerve. And so basically, you receive light in the retina, and then that information is sent as an electric signal through the optic nerve at the speed of 423 miles per hour. Don't ask me how they measured that. Into the visual cortex, and that's where you interpret what you see. right? So the visual cortex is a huge image processor and library. It's where you store your memories, you imagine fantasy worlds and people, outcomes, where you visually plan and dream. And no matter if you look at something, remember something, or just imagine it with closed eyes, the visual cortex fires up exactly the same. And you, most of you that work with Rita Marie, we do the heart math, or we do the little mini meditations where we imagine ourselves to be at a favorite place. And that's exactly as if you're right there, because this is how the brain works. It makes no difference to your brain, your vision, your nervous system, if you're actually at the ocean, let's say that's your favorite place, or you just imagine to be there. That's why this is so powerful to visualize and meditate, because it's happening in the brain. Vision happens in the brain. So you perceive with your visual cortex where light impressions from the retina are turned into what you see. I always say the retina doesn't know a table from a chair, right? And the pioneer of natural vision improvement, ophthalmologist Dr. William Bates, said, we see very largely with the mind and only partly with the eyes. The phenomena of vision depends on the mind's interpretation of the impression on the retina. What we see is not that impression, but our own interpretation of it. Right? That's why we had that huge thing a few years ago with that dress that was, you know, black and blue stripes, and then some people said it's yellow, it's white and gold, because we interpret things differently. We, like, there is really no objective world. We all see things differently. So what does this mean? So even, let's say, even if you have an ideally shaped and super healthy eyeball, 20/20 vision, maybe 20/10 vision, it's useless if the visual cortex is not interpreting the data correctly. So let's say the retina receives the light rays and the visual cortex says, hey, I'm looking at a round shape with ovals and another round shape with another oval, meaning a face. If the part of the brain that's responsible for facial recognition is damaged, the perfect eyeball will not let you recognize your partner or best friend, even know that you're looking at another human. And most of you probably know know Oliver Sacks. He died a few years ago, but he was a professor of neurology, and he had something called face blindness. So he didn't know when he looked at himself or some other person who it was. He didn't know who this person was. So he had to use markers like so-and-so has a British accent or my assistant has red hair. Another example of this is really, really fascinating. They did studies with people with dissociative identity disorder, used to be called multiple personality disorder. And people with this disorder have a variety of alters or personas. And scientists, there were three studies done with people that have this disease. And scientists studied the vision of the different alters and were amazed to find out that the vision varies a lot. They might have 20/15 vision in one alter, and have -3 diopters in another. And even the pupil size, the eye pressure, color perception, and other factors varied between the different alters. So how can that be, right? How can that be if the eyeball is just this little thing that you can measure? And another example, you know, some of you might know this or not, but when we take drugs that affect your alter your perception, like LSD or something like that, you see things that are not there and vice versa, right? So if the eye was doing all the seeing, any drug that affects the brain wouldn't make any difference to your visual perception. And you might be wondering, what does this have to do with me? I don't have any of these things. I don't take drugs. But again, remember how vision varies depending on your stress, depending on your feelings, if you're sick. All these things have an impact on our vision. And so even though you don't have any of these diseases, you have varying states of body and mind, and that's and your eyesight will reflect that. Your eyesight will not be the same depending on how you feel. The brain is the driver and regulator of the nervous system, so any changes in mental, emotional, and physical states have an impact on your eyesight. So, you know, you might have felt that you're feeling strained, you're tired, maybe after being on the computer or, you know, after a sleepless night. So just know when you don't address, and this is the root cause is strain. And it can be physical strain, it can be mental strain. Usually the mental strain is the driver of the physical strain. And this continuous excessive strain in eyes, body, and mind is the root cause. And that's the problem with glasses and contacts, is that you can strain and you still get clear vision. So you continue to do this habit. You don't ever learn how to relax the mind and the eyes, because your glasses allow you this bad habit, much like you can eat donuts and have your diabetes under control when you take metformin, right? So it covers up the root cause, because it allows you to have clarity without good vision habits. One second, let me just look. So here's a tip: wear weaker glasses or take them off if you can see enough, right? You don't, like, if you work at the computer, you don't need a distance vision for 20 feet. Or if you have good vision at that distance, you don't need to wear your progressive glasses for driving if you have at least 20/40 vision. Just know that glasses distort. They don't just distort your world. Minus lenses make everything small. They distort your face. They break the light artificially through this distorting lens. They also put more intensity onto the fovea, where you have that clear vision, right? So it's kind of like a burning glass. You know how the burning glass, the sunlight. So I'm not saying that glasses burn your retina, but they bundle the light and they force more concentrated light rays onto the macula. And at the same time, they reduce peripheral vision. They're adding more stress to the central vision. And same, so when you have plus lenses, they make your eyes bigger. So your world is like seen through a magnifying glass, but other people also see that in your face. So this is the thing. What we call age-related eye diseases is really not age-related. It's lifestyle-related, nutrition-related. And stronger glasses have create a higher risk of eye damage to the eye. And I will get to that in just the next second. But the leading cause of blindness and low vision, and Dr. Reed and we talk about this, are those, you know, so-called age-related eye diseases that, and most of them have the cause of blood sugar regulation. That's really a huge, huge, huge problem. But of course, stress levels, sleep, your mindset, all of these factors impact your vision. So cataracts. You get cataracts, and cataracts, by the way, if you have diabetes, or even if you're pre-diabetic, or like Dr. Rita Marie said, you're in that level where that's still considered normal, there's a 5 times higher risk of cataracts. And I tell you, I just got a woman emailed me 3 days ago, and I had a session with her. She's only 40. So she told me she has early stage cataracts. I'm like, do they run your family? Like, she said, no. And then we talked, and I said, you know, what about your diet, your labs? And he said, oh, yeah, I just went to the doctor, and the doctor said my blood sugar is pre-diabetic levels. But he said, don't worry. You don't have to worry. Everything is okay. I'm like, what? You have pre-diabetic levels, and the doctor told you everything is okay? You don't have to worry about anything? That's exactly what Dr. Rita Marie was talking about. So she had cataracts at age 40 already. That's not... Like, age-related is usually what they, you know, 60s, because by then, all the bad stuff that we're doing has accumulated, right? And this is how glaucoma looks. So you get tunnel vision, that's too much pressure. Or diabetic retinopathies, right? You lose patches of the retina peels off from the back of the eye. And this is another image showing those diabetic damages to your eyes. So on the right, you see the extreme case. Those blood clots, those hemorrhages, the retina breaks away from the back of the eye. So that's when you aneurysm, like a visual stroke, all these damages, and they can happen to your eyes way before anybody says that you have diabetes. And the big problem is the eye care industry focuses 100% on the 10%. They don't pay any attention to your brain or the rest where your vision actually happens. And readers, like I said before, readers will damage your far vision, so you don't want to start wearing them. Having good vision and teaching others about good vision habits and your possibility to improve your vision will make such a difference in your life. The vision is our most important sense. 80 to 90% of our input, sensory input, comes from the eyes. So another tip before I'm almost at the end. Another tip, blink every 2 to 3 seconds. So blinking, Selma Rath blinks about every second. Blinking lubricates your cornea. It prevents staring. Cornea has no blood supply, so it prevents any damages to your cornea. It's super important. It keeps your gaze relaxed. So do that. And if you can't remember, do 30 seconds of rapid blinking. And after that, you will automatically want to blink more. And then another tip. So a lot of times when you feel strain in your eyes, it's coming from mental strain. So something called palming. You close your eyes and you cover them with your cupped hand. And then you imagine you're in a really happy place. You could be a person you think about, something that relaxes you. So palming is a great, great, great way to feel, to either, if you already have eye strain or to prevent it. Sunning, I talked about that already. Ditch your sunglasses, wear a hat instead. And then obviously, you're learning this from Dr. Rita Marie, good nutrition, lutein and zeaxanthin and others, yellow plant pigments in your macula that protect you from blue light in the sun. They come from plants, kale, spinach, egg yolks too. So eat those foods that protect your eyes. Carrots, beta carotene. I have to be careful with carrots because they do raise my blood sugar. But beta carotene is super important for rod cell health, which is your night vision, the vitamin A that you need for night vision. This is what I'm using. Dunyella salina is an algae. That's the highest concentration of beta carotene that we have. You can order that online. It comes as a powder. I put it in my smoothies. And that's pretty much it. So I have a free gift called my 10 Habits for Healthy, Happy Eyes. And you can download that at that URL, naturallyclearvision.com/10habits. So this is a compilation of all the good tips and more detail that I mentioned in this training. And when you download that, on the thank you page, there's an option to book a complimentary 30-minute consultation with me. So when you download it, you get a thank you page, and then you can book a session with me if you are interested in learning more. And that's it.
Wow. I got knocked down a little bit, but I am back, and that was an amazing presentation. I am so grateful for you for being here and sharing all this amazing information and practical strategies and practical tips. So, you know, to tie this all together, all the things Claudia talked about, you know, the blinking and the relaxation and the belief system and the stress combined with the food, which is, you know, what we talk about all the time with our pillars, right? We have to, you can't just focus on food. You can't just focus on, oh, my eyes will be better if I wear glasses, or can't just focus on one thing. It's this whole comprehensive protocol. And I think you shared some amazing, amazing information and resources, and what a generous offer to offer your handout plus a consultation. I have worked with Claudia. I need to book a couple more sessions because I not as much on my own, right? I have your program, and I bought her program when she first started it, and then I didn't actually go through it. And when I got on a call with her, I got all motivated and inspired to actually do it. And then I haven't been doing it as much. But I have actually improved my vision dramatically. Long before I met Claudia, and I got introduced to the methods that she teaches, and it was amazing. I got to the point where I was able to drive without glasses during the day, without glasses. And I was able to see it, like, I think I was down to 26G is what they told me. But then I started the tension. I started school. I had to be studying all the time, and it reverted it. But it's still way, way better because of my nutrition and because of, you know, remembering some of the habits. But I know that it can get so, so much better. And it's so nice to not have to rely on glasses. I don't wear my glasses anymore except when I drive. So if those of you who've driven with me have seen me in glasses, other than that, I don't wear them. And I'm constantly aware of all those things. But I think there's so much we can do when we pay attention to it. So I would love to open it up for questions. For anybody that has questions, go ahead and type them in the chat or type them in the Q&A or just raise your hand and let's chat. You know, we've got Claudia here. So who has questions? Anybody? Let me look in the chat and the Q&A.
I don't see the chat myself, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know it's hard when you're teaching. You don't see the chat. Okay, so let's see. Brandon said, excellent, very informative. Let me see. I'm going to go backwards. Let's see. And Diana mentioned in here that she was one of those people. She had the retinal damage, and her eye doctor told her she had blood sugar imbalances. Mm. He asked her how, you know, he told her, you have to control your diabetes. And she said, I don't have diabetes. And her practitioner, her health primary care said, no, you don't have diabetes, until she started doing Sweet Spot and started measuring. And she went, oh, my gosh, I have prediabetes. And it reversed in a year. It reversed by getting her sugars under control. So that's what's really exciting.
And that's the thing. You can change. You can, you know, you can reverse many eye diseases depending on how progressed it is.
Yeah.
You can always stop the progression. And that's the minimal, because you can always stop the progression and not turn blind. I've had so many calls from people that turned blind, even though they were in the care of eye doctors, because they weren't trained. They weren't informed about the foods and all the other factors, right? They get some surgery, some injections, or some drops for glaucoma, you know, but they don't actually ever treat the root cause. And you can always do something, no matter what your stage is. You can always do something.
You can always do something. I mean, you can't say, you can't always completely reverse
no.
a retinopathy or something, but you know, the knowledge that you have now empowers you to make differences before it becomes that far gone, you know?
Yeah.
Oops.
But I just want people to know that it's like, you know, and everybody's like, oh, I want it back to 2020. 2020 is one aspect of good vision, is visual acuity, but that's not everything. And there's so many other factors, and everybody can improve. It doesn't mean that everybody reverses an eye disease or everybody gets back to 2020 vision. But again, any improvement, any lowering in diopters will make a big impact in your life. And doing things without glasses, like you do, Rita Marie, your vision is so good still because you don't wear glasses all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you wore your glasses on the computer the whole time, that's
oh, it would
be wearing for glasses. Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the thing. Don't wear more than you ever need for a given task. And if you spend all day inside, there's no need to have 20 feet clarity. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And here's the thing. I never used to be able to, if I was sitting at the computer without, my husband would say, put on your glasses, because I'd have my head all the way up to the screen. And now I'm sitting like 3 feet away from, and this is a little baby laptop, and I can read the screen, no problem.
Mm.
So it's improved from like, I think it was 4.5 or 5 diopters when I, way back when, and now I do like 2 for night vision, and if I'm going to drive during the day, I'll wear my lower ones that are 1 point something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge difference, and you're right, it makes the lenses a lot lighter, although modern stuff, modern glasses are much better than they used to be. I know mentioned Zinni, right? You mentioned Zinni, and that's a great place to get glasses, because I just order like 4 pairs. For $100, I get 4 pairs of, you know, rimless wireless things, and that way I can have, you know, I can have one in the car, I can have one here and there, I can put them on, I put them off. And a lot of people are concerned that putting them on and off will damage your glasses. But if you pay $25 for your glasses instead of $450 for your glasses, you can afford to replace them more regularly and have multiple pairs so that you don't have to wear them all the time. You can just grab them when you need them.
Yeah, what we did with your glasses too, we took the astigmatism correction out. So astigmatism is very variable, but once it's in your glasses, it kind of manifests it. So you don't want that. And usually anything under 1 diopter to 1.5 diopters of astigmatism, which you can see in the cylinder column of your prescription, cylinder is the strength of your astigmatism, axis is the angle. And you can always take that out and add a little bit to the sphere. I mean, that's going beyond this, but you don't want astigmatism correction in your glasses, and that makes them cheaper also.
Yeah.
So that, you know, sometimes I see people with like a quarter diopter or half a diopter of astigmatism, which doesn't even affect your vision. It's just a little imbalance in your cornea, because one eye muscle or two eye muscle is more tight. So when your eye muscles pull unevenly on your soft, squishy eyeball, right, the cornea, which is an extension of your eyeball, obviously will also be out of shape. So it's really important not to have that in your glasses, and it makes them a lot cheaper. And that's, you know, the optometrists, again, I don't think they're evil, but they love to put these little things in there, and that does make the glasses more expensive. And I think some of them do look at the money also. I mean, I'm sure there's a difference.
Well, it's part of their, you know, they don't like any other healthcare practitioner, but with insurance the way it is, they don't make a lot of money. My sister's an optometrist and she has her own practice, and it's a challenge. And, you know, the glasses, there's the vanity factor and everybody wants the fancy glasses. But at one point I told her, hey, I'd love to get those rimless ones because I don't, you know, and the thin things. She was going to get them for me for $450. And
wow.
I'm like, forget it. You know, I'll buy them for $25 on Zinni, you know. So, yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of, it's kind of like I equate it, the optometrist to the natural vision is like Western trained MDs are to holistic nutrition and, you know, all the stuff that we do. And my, cause my sister went crazy telling me I must have had pseudo myopia when I told her I corrected it, you know, like halved my prescription. She was very skeptical, the same way, you know, when I talk to some of my MD friends who are close, they'll say, oh, yeah, that's just, you know, it's just a placebo effect.
But you know what's interesting? I actually met my second cousin just a few months ago. I'd never met her for some bizarre reason, even though she's from the same town in Hamburg. But she's an ophthalmologist, and so we got talking, and you know what? She uses the same. She does some of this. She does calming. She does some of those practices.
Nice.
She is 54. She's like, I'm not going to wear glasses. She actually teaches that to some of her patients. So she obviously does surgeries, right? But she's totally on board. And she said her dad was also an ophthalmologist, also used the Bates method to stay out of glasses. I think he got glasses at like age 80 or something. So I'm like, wow. Because I feel there is some ophthalmologists and optometrists out there. And, you know, Jacob Lieberman is one, and then a few members of our association are actually optometrists. So there is some optometrists that understand that the brain is involved, but the traditional eye care industry uses a 200-year-old method. They look at the eyeball as if it's not attached to your body or your brain, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not how it works. I mean, neuroscience, we know that the brain is plastic and the brain changes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and the eyes are an extension of the brain. They're connected to the brain.
Exactly.
So,
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not seeing any more questions. I'm just seeing, you know, conversation back and forth, a lot of appreciation. And I, you know, it does take work. There's nothing, you know, it's like exercise. It's work. You're not going to just go once and then, you know, you work out and you go, okay, I'm good for the rest of the year. It doesn't work that way. Same thing with food. You can't go out and eat a big salad and then eat crap the rest of the week and expect to be healthy. And it's the same thing with caring for your eyes. It's part of your body. And like Claudia says, it's not really your eyes you're caring for, it's your vision. And we really need to look at the eyes are a vehicle for the vision. And when we have physical damage to the eyes, it's going to affect your vision. But there's so much more than just physical damage to the eyes. So when you combine good nutrition and you combine, you know, yoga and stretching and the, you know, muscle relaxation and all the exercise, the palming and all the things that Claudia talks about and the blinking. You told me I thought I was blinking a lot and you told me I wasn't blinking enough. I'm like, I thought I blinked all the time.
No, and if we look at screens, I mean, we're intently focused. I mean, it's blinking always. That's why so many people have dry eyes after being on the computer because it's a tendency for all of us to blink less. So I recommend putting a sticker on your computer or some desktop reminders or something.
Yeah, I remember when I took that class, like it was 35 years ago, and he had us do, sketch, breathe, and blink. And we had we put all over, sketch, breathe, and blink, and that's part of the technology. And, oh, man, it just is stuck in my mind all the time. You know, the breathe is so important, and that I feel like I've made great headway with. And the blink, I guess not as much as I thought I had after talking to you and you watching me. But that sketching thing was that, you know, like you said, you only see that one little tiny point. We think we see the whole field. And when you, like, keep moving that little focus around, it's amazing how clear you could see. I'm looking across this huge parking lot across the highway, and I'm seeing some glimmers of clarity over there.
Right. Yeah, and that's a really important aspect. Dr. Bates called it central fixation. So noticing that the spot, if you look at a word and you look at one letter, that you see that letter best and everything else is more blurry. And the further away it is from the point you're looking at, the blurrier it is, And the closer it is, definitely clearer, but it's not as clear. So we have to move our eyes a lot to have that clarity. And the rest is all peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. And really noticing the difference. And that happens a lot with when you have, especially with nearsightedness, that you try to see everything clear at once, like your whole computer screen, your whole phone.
Yeah.
You try to see the whole thing clear at once, which is anatomically not possible. So you're looking with parts of your retina that cannot see clearly when you do that staring, when you don't move your eyes. Great observation. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's really not hours of eye exercise. Some people ask me that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody asked that in the chat, but it's the practices I teach are really just meant to teach you good new habits. It's like how you initially in sweet spot, you have to learn how to do this and measure this. And then you, at some point, it's maintenance and using good habits. And, you know, I do some palming and I do sunning every day just because it feels good and relaxing. And massage is important. I teach self-massage with little balls. Because massage, any tension in the neck, especially the C2 connected vertebrae connects to the optic nerve. So any tension, especially in the neck, contributes to eye strain and blurriness. So it's kind of a holistic, you know, approach. It's like your body tension, your mental tension, your foods, your sleep, your hydration, right? The cornea has only tears and, you know, fluids for nutrition. So,
yeah. Pretty cool. I was going to say that what I used to notice, see, people were asking on a previous call about allergy testing, what's the best way to do allergy testing. For me, what happened to me is if I ate a food that I was allergic to, it would affect my C2 and I would feel like tenderness there and then it would affect my vision. So I go, oh, my vision's going. What did I eat that I was allergic to? This is while I was first learning this and I was still eating, you know, dairy and eggs and, you know, wheat and all those kinds of things. And I actually was able to detect some of my allergies. I think the egg allergy was the one that really killed, it was headaches, but it was also before the headache came on, I would have this blur that would happen in my visual field.
Oh yeah. You're very, I mean, that's very tuned into your vision. But for anybody listening, if you're like not aware that your vision is varying, like always put your glasses on and just check in and notice. Even people with perfect eyesight, if you're stressed, if you're in fight or flight mode, your pupils dilate, your peripheral vision shuts down, your vision does vary, and you don't have to be in a major stress situation, just having that internal mental stress, right? That kind of, you know, I have so much to do, not breathing, you know, the chest breathing, all that triggers our stress response, and that creates blurrier vision. So,
yeah. And do you teach yawning? I forget if you do that.
Yeah, yawning.
Yawning. I do that a lot.
Yeah, yawning is really good. It stretches your facial muscles. It lubricates your eyes, moving your eyes. Yeah, there's very specific practices I teach, obviously.
Yeah.
And also moving your focus around, you know, like we're not meant to look at one distance for hours at a time, what we do now with computers. So moving your, I have my computer. I look just above my computer. I look into my backyard. So my focus is always like not just near far, but sideways. I always shift my attention. So that's really important. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome to know because I'm finding that I'm more and more getting into that. I'm sitting at this computer looking, but I'm turning and looking out the window and looking above, you know,
and
it's a, part of me was thinking, oh, you're getting distracted. But no, I'm taking care of my vision.
Well, that's both, right?
It's taking care of your vision.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, of course, it's also, I mean, astigmatism is related to, like, multitasking and kind of in, you know, I don't mean that as a, but an ADD kind of personality, like always jumping around, having too many balls in the air. So astigmatism is multiple focal points in your retina. It's not too far, too behind the retina in front. It has multiple focal points. And it's related to an inner, like outside of the posture relation and the eye movement relationship that that optometrist Elliot Forrest discovered in the 80s. It's also like a mental kind of jumping around and not really staying with one. Right? So good vision is both central clarity and peripheral awareness. It's not like staring at it, but it's both the, you know, have you ever been in an office and you walk up to somebody and they kind of get totally startled because they haven't noticed you and you have that peripheral vision. They're so that's too much strain on the central vision. But and glasses do create that because they kind of Your peripheral vision is always blurry anyway, but the glasses kind of force you into more of a tunnel vision field, right? So they, they shut you. Yeah, that's another reason.
And take mine off as when I do drive. If I'm driving and I'm, you know, having to, then I stop for gas, I immediately take them off. If I stop at a toll booth, I have them on a little thing and I drop them down. And I'm even while I'm driving, even at night, I'll just take them off because I don't want my eyes to have to, you know, strain at a near point like that. So anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So thank you so much. Petra put in, I think it's any questions for Claudia. Yeah. Any other questions before we go? Cause you got her here and she can answer your questions and you're welcome to come on the phone.
Yeah. I can talk for hours about this. So like you can talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. It doesn't look like it. So thank you guys so much for being here. I'm going to open up the line so everybody can say goodbye. And on the count of three, one, two, three.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.